Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind. Graphic Audio presents Lilith St. Crowe's Jill Kismet.
My Lord God, do not forsake me when I face Hell's legions. In thy name and with thy blessing, I go forth to cleanse the night.
Book 6.
Angel Town.
Narrated by Julianne Elliott. With performances by Stephen Carpenter, Ren Casey, Colleen Delaney, Thomas Keegan, Richard Rowan, James Konacek, Ken Jackson, Elizabeth Jernigan, Mort Shelby, Christopher Graybill, Johann Detweiler, Alyssa Wilmoth, James Lewis, Tim Carlin, Yasmin Toison, Eric Messner, Michael Glenn, Gregory Gorton, Michael John Casey, Lily Beacon, and Nathaniel Perry.
Descensus ad Infernos. In the shifting wood of suicides that borders the cold rivers of hell, what is one tree, more or less? They are a mosaic, those trees. Every shade of the rainbow, and hues humans cannot see. Every color except one, but that has changed. There is one white tree, a slender birch-like shape. Instead of a screaming face hidden in the bark, there is a sleeping woman carved with swift strokes. Eyes closed, mouth relaxed, she is a peaceful, pale pillar amid the cold shifting. For hell is frozen, a chill that burns. Under the spinning, nausea sky, holding dry stars of alien geometry, something new may happen, might happen, will happen, is happening now. Pinpricks of light settle into the white tree's naked branches. She has not been here long enough to grow the dark, tumescent leaves every other tree has. Those leaves shake now, for these trees are conscious. Their bloodshot eyes are always open, their distended mouths always moving. The pinpricks move like fireflies on a summer evening, each one a semaphore, gracefully unconnected to the whole. They crown the tree with light, weaving tiny trails of phosphorescence in the gasping cold fluid that passes for air. They dangle the streamers, and the storm is very close. Hell has noticed this intrusion, and Hell is not pleased. The trails of light form a complex net. The other trees are a rising chorus of the damned, their wordless wails one anguished plea, take me. Their roots hold fast, sunk deep in metallic ash. The river rises, white streaks of foam clutching its oil-sheen surface. Leaves are torn free, and their stinking blood makes great splotches on the dry ground. A cloud of black rises from each splotch, feeding greedily on the glistening fluid. The net is almost complete. almost. Hell's skies are whipped with fury. The storm breaks over the first edge of the woods. Maggot-white lightning scorches. The pale net over the white tree draws close, like a woman pulling her hair back. Long, dark, curling hair, spangled with silver. The souls of the dam explode with screams that would turn the world to bleeding ice if the world heard. The ashes of their destruction will sink into the carpet of the woods, each separate particle growing another tree, for there is always more agony in hell. The net collapses, silvery filaments winding themselves in. It shrinks to a point of brilliance, and the shadows this light casts are cleansed. They etch themselves onto the ash. The light winks out. A few tiny, crystalline white feathers fall, but they snuff themselves out before they reach the heaving ground. The white tree no longer stands. It is gone. Hell itself shakes. Anastasis.
Buzzing in my head, all around me, creeping in, filling my skull, crawling into my teeth, sticky little insect feet all over my face, feelers probing at my lips. They move, hot and pinprick tiny, and that sound is enough to drag me out of where? Dark, no air. Sand fills my mouth, but the little things crawling on me aren't sand. They're alive, suffocating in my mouth and my nose too, lungs starved. My heart, a suddenly pounding drum. Scrabbling through sand, dirt everywhere. The insects don't sting, just make their horrible sound and move around me in disturbed little circles. I exploded out of the shallow grave. Little bits of flying things buzzed angrily around me. Flashing lights struck me like hammers. I fell, the wasps still crawling and buzzing, and trying to probe through my mouth and nose and ears and eyes and hands and feet and belly. They were still eating because flesh had rotted.
I've rotted.
The train lumbered past. I stood. My back hit something solid and I jolted to a stop. The wasps crawled over me. I forced air out through my nose, and it blew slimy chunks of snot-laced sand away. I collapsed against the low retaining wall, my head ringing like a gong. I bent over and vomited up a mass of dark, writhing liquid.
Oh,
the stench was awesome, titanic, a living thing. It crawled on the breeze, pressing against me. This time it was long strands of gooey white, coming from nowhere and passing through me, landing in twisting runnels. The egg white was all over me. Loathsome slime. I squeezed my knees together, bent over. The wasps crawled, and other bits of insect life clung to me. Maggots, other things. Out in the desert, the bugs get to you, especially in a shallow grave when there's been trauma to the tissues. I tore at the rotting flesh cloaking me. It peeled away in strips, and under it I was whole, slick with slime. A huge tearing coming all the way up from my toes, and produced an amazing gout of that slippery egg white stuff again.
Ectoplasm? But...
Pain came down on me, laid me open. Skull cracked wide, bones twisting, everything in me reforming. My knees refused to give. My short-bitten nails dug through the cloak of rotting and found my own skin underneath. I scrambled along the retaining wall. The grave yawned, leering, crawling with disturbed insect life. I fell on the sand, grubbed up handfuls of it, and scrubbed it myself. I didn't care if it stripped skin off and left me bleeding. Didn't care if it went down to bone. I just wanted the rot away. Under the mess of decaying flesh was a torn t-shirt, rags of what had been leather pants.
At least I have some clothes.
I was barefoot. I looked up. A full moon hung grinning in the sky, bloated cheese yellow. The hard, clear points of stars glittered, and steam slid free of my skin.
Whole skin.
Clear. Unblemished. Scraped in places.
But not rotting.
My questing fingers found filthy hair, stiff with sand and God knew what else. My skull was still there. Hard curves of bone, tender at the back. I held my hands out, flipped them palm up. They shook like palsied things.
Like branches.
The image fled as soon as it arrived, mercifully. My forearms were pale under the screen of filth. On my right wrist, just above the softest part, something glittered, hard, like a diamond. It caught the moonlight and sent back a dart of brilliance straight through my aching skull. The sight filled me with unsteady loathing, and I shut my eyes.
Start with the obvious first. Who am I?
I tilted my head back.
Who am I?
I didn't know. I pushed through the door. My feet left bloody prints on the faded blue speckled linoleum. The diner was deserted. Long white lunch counter with chrome napkin holders, pies under glass domes, and the smell of industrial coffee fought with the reek around me. The night wind had scrubbed the worst of the stink away, but I still felt it like a cloud breathing from my skin.
Why am I worried about that when I'm dripping with sandy-crusted filth, bare and bloody-footed, wild-haired, in rags of leather pants and a t-shirt is beyond me.
Still, it bothered me. Something about my hair bothered me, too. I felt completely naked, even though all my bits were mostly covered. I was too scrawny for there to be much to look at anyway. I was pared down to scarecrow bone. Muscle wasted away. My elbows bigger than my biceps. My knees knobs. The diner sat alone off the highway, its windows glowing gold with warm electric light. Two ancient spaceship-shaped gas pumps stood outside in a glare of fluorescence. No car was visible for miles in any direction. In the distance, the glow of a city rose, staining the night. I'd been heading for that glow for a slow, stumbling eternity, reeling drunkenly on the blacktop because the shoulder was full of pebbles and other things. Broken glass, cigarette butts, nameless random trash.
And I'm just another piece of refuse blown along.
The booths marched away, all covered in blue vinyl. The tables were spotless, their chrome edges sharp bright. The window booths even had sprays of artificial violets in tiny, mass-produced white ceramic vases, the kinds with pebbled sides and wide mouths. The place probably did a land office business during the day.
Well, maybe.
Just a minute. Be right with you.
Yeah, great. I don't even have any money.
There was a phone in a booth outside the front door.
But who the hell can I call? I don't even know my own name.
Well, goody. Good gravy, Marie.
He was 250 pounds if he was an ounce. Most of it straining to escape his white t-shirt and the stained apron slung loincloth style below his considerable belly. Despite that, he looked hard, and the lightness of his step told me he could do some damage if he wanted to.
If he had to.
He simply stared at me.
God damn, girl, what happened to you?
How the hell do I know? I just clawed my way out of a goddamn grave.
I opened my mouth, shut it. Then the diner door opened behind me. Instinct spiked under my skin, and I jerked to the side. My bare, bleeding feet braced for action. I ducked, my hand blurring up in a fist. But broad, warm fingers closed around my filthy, naked upper arm. He set me on my feet. Taller than me, stoop-shouldered and wiry, his dishwater hair laying close to the skull, and a shadow of acid melt scarring over the lower half of his face. I stared at his twitching, ruined lips. You could see where the scars had been really bad. But they were...
Are they?
Yes. They were retreating. I knew it because I'd seen him before. The black curtain over whatever had happened to me didn't part, but I knew him.
You.
Apron man crossed his beefy forearms.
I'm about to call the authority. What the fuck is...
The scarred man looked up. His eyes were bright blue, and that was wrong too. Something shifted under the skin of his face, and his mouth opened slightly. No sound came out, but the fat man nodded.
Oh... Well, why didn't you say so? Nobody ever tells me nothing. Coffee coming up.
As Apron Man moved into the kitchen, Blue Eyes looked down at me. Then, as if it was the most natural thing in the world, he raised his other hand, indicating the booths, like he was asking me where I wanted to sit.
Those eyes.
They'd been filmed before, gray cataracts hooding them, and the scarring had been much, much worse. In runnels and pleats, like the flesh had been reshaped with acid. He'd worn gray coveralls, and the name tag had been a snarl of faded thread.
I know you. How do I know you?
He shrugged a little and indicated the booths again.
Great. Well, there's not anything else I'm doing.
I picked a booth along the wall, since the windows made my nape prickle, and I needed to see the front door.
Why? Why do I need to see it?
I just did, that's all. He let me choose my side. Then he slid in across from me. Fine threads of gold glittered in his hair under the lights. I stared at Blue Eyes. He regarded me mildly, his ruined mouth curving up in what could have been a small smile. Strings of dirty hair fell in my face, and it seemed wrong. I tried again to think of what my hair should look like. Got exactly nowhere. Apron Man brought two heavy, steaming china cups of coffee. He gave me an incurious glance and walked away, his heavy shoes blurring two of my footprints.
Go on, Jill. You can ask, at least.
Who am I?
Blue Eyes shrugged.
You know me. But you can't talk?
Another small shrug. This one different than the last.
You won't talk.
This earned me a nod.
Well, great.
How am I... Jesus. You... I know you, somehow.
Another nod. Then he made a slow, deliberate movement, reaching under the table like he was digging in a pocket. Faint alarm ran through me. He laid the gun on the tabletop, its barrel carefully pointed away from either of us. I stared, my mouth hanging open as he picked up his coffee mug deliberately. It was a .45, custom built. A nice piece of hardware. Dull black. A real cannon. I knew what it would feel like if I picked it up. I knew the heft and the pull. Knew exactly how much pressure to apply on the trigger. I could feel that the butt was reinforced as well for pistol whipping.
My gun. That's mine. I have a gun.
Or I had one, and you're returning it.
Blue Eyes nodded. He set down his mug, then edged the butt a little closer to me with one fingertip. A faint breeze touched my face. His mouth opened as if he would say something profound, but then he shut it tightly and shook his head.
You're gonna have to help me here. Give me a verb or something.
The thought of a shower filled me with sudden longing. Maybe some food, too. A bed to sleep in. Because I was so, so tired.
Dead tired.
Nausea cramped under my breastbone again. Blue Eyes was fiddling around under the table once more. This time he came up with something very small. He laid it on the table, his palm covering it.
A gun and something else.
I looked up. His face changed. With the cataracts over his eyes peeled away, those eyes spoke for him. Right now, they burned with pure, agonizing sadness. The expression drew his mouth down, and I found the scarring was retreating. It shrank on his face a little, the skin smoothing out. His hand lifted. It was a ring. A simple circle of silver, and my heart leapt. Scruffed up and obviously worn, I knew that if I picked it up, I would see the etching on the inside. Tiny scratches of Cyrillic, the only thing I would ever know how to read in that alphabet. Because someone had shown me a long time ago. Das Vidania.
Go with God.
It had another meaning, too.
Goodbye.
Bile whipped the back of my throat. I picked up my mug with dream-slow fingers. It was too hot, but I took a searing gulp of the acrid coffee anyway.
Ah!
It tasted like it had been on a burner for a while, but it was better than that egg white crap. A sudden thought occurred to me.
Ectoplasm. It was ectoplasm. Something's happened.
Oh! Hot water filled my eyes. A tear rolled down my cheek, and Blue Eyes nodded. He pointed at my right hand, and I knew without asking what he meant. I set my mug down and turned my hand over, looking at the thing embedded in my right wrist. It was fever hot. A glittering, colorless, diamond-shaped gem sat in my skin, its edges frayed, like it had been surgically implanted and then pulled around a bit. It spasmed and settled like a shivering little animal. That tiny, twitching tremble communicated itself up the bones of my arm, settling in my shoulder with a high, hard hum. Fear whipped through me, and a bald edge of anger.
What the fuck is this?
His lips moved slightly, and the flesh on his face crawled, like there were bugs underneath. I pressed back into the booth, shoving my tender heels into the floor. My right hand darted for the gun with scary, instinctive speed. My fingers curling, my arm tensing, I trained the barrel unerringly at his head.
Familiar. Done this before, too.
He pointed again at my right wrist. His lips moved slightly. The words slid into my head, interlocking puzzle pieces of meaning.
When you're ready.
My eyes widened as I stared across the table. The booth was empty. I flinched, the gun lowering as I scanned the entire place.
Empty? Except for Apron Boy.
He came out from the kitchen. Quick as a wink, I had the gun under the table. My left hand scooped up the ring, and the feel of cool metal sent a zing through me, like tinfoil against metal fillings. Apron Boy held a steaming plate, which he plopped down in front of me along with silverware wrapped in a paper napkin.
Nice guy. Paid for your breakfast. You eat right on up, honey.
Yeah. Thanks. That seemed to satisfy him. The plate held ham, scrambled eggs, hash browns. It looked good.
Eat while you can, Jill.
Jill! I'm Jill!
I tucked the gun safely away. The ring fitted securely on my third left finger.
Am I married?
Suddenly, I saw a pair of dark eyes, silver-scarred hair, and fluid grace. He half turned, reaching for something beside the stove, and the clean economy of motion made my heart skip a beat. As soon as the image came, it vanished. I was suddenly hungry, famished.
A gun, a ring, and whatever that thing is on my wrist. And a vanishing blue-eyed mute. Whoever I am, I'm certainly interesting.
I hunkered down, stripped the napkin off the stamped metal knife and fork and spoon, and started shoveling it in. By the time I quit, Apron Man had refilled my coffee twice and brought out two more plates. I couldn't get full. Felt like a pig. At first, the food just vanished into the huge hole in my gut. But after the second plate, I slowed down a bit. I was in the middle of the third before I began to feel halfway satisfied. Biscuits and gravy, sausage patties, a mountain of wheat toast dripping with butter, a smaller plate of huevos rancheros with a side of rice. It was enough to put a grown man in the hospital, but it looked good to me. Apron Boy approached the table with the coffee pot and a slice of coconut cream pie.
I don't even know if I like coconut cream pie.
I sat there and looked at the piped decorative cream and the little shaved bits of toasted nut flesh and felt sick. Then I wondered if chocolate cream would have been worse, or cherry. But how could I know about pie and not know who I was?
Jill, you're Jill, and you're armed. Focus on that. And the rest will take care of itself.
Apron Man set down the pot of coffee on the table, then wedged himself into the other side of the booth.
Sure be glad to close up early tonight. Get off my old dogs. I'm going into town, give you a lift.
Town?
Santa Luz. A bad old lady yourself. You'd have to walk a fair ways. Told your friend I'd give you a lift since he was going elsewhere.
I picked up the clean fork, cut off the tip of the pie slice.
Nice of you.
Yeah, well, gotta do what we can to help each other. You got somewhere in town you're going?
No, just the city limits will do.
How's that pie? Is it gone off? I wouldn't think so. Old Honorius brought it in this morning.
Honorius?
It's good. This your place?
Landed here a while ago. Get a fair amount of business. People drive, they get hungry. And here I am. Gas pumps still work, but mostly it's the phone and the cooking. People come in for the phone, and it smells so good they want to have a bite.
I nodded. My right hand came up. I offered it across the table. The gleam on the underside of my wrist sent a small rainbow winging across the formica. Jill. He grinned even wider. It was a nice smile. Broad white teeth. The corners of his eyes crinkled up, and for a moment, something golden moved in the depths of his eyes. You could see where he had been handsome once. His hairy paw closed over my filthy, smaller hand.
Martin. Martin D. Poors, at your service. Honor to meet you. Now, what do you say we clean up here and get moving? Dawn's gonna break before you step over that limit, miss.
A great wave of exhaustion crashed over me. My stomach was full. I had a gun and the ring. And that was all that was important right now. I came up from the concrete with a southpaw punch, bones shattering as my fist hit. My foot flicked out, heel striking sharply in the second man's midriff. The alley tilted crazily, and the rotting refuse and choke deep drifts along its side smelled about as horrible as I did. Faint grayish light seeped in through the crack of sky showing above. There were two more of them. Cold fear and exhilaration spilled through me like wine.
Gutter trash, Jill. Not worth your time.
But my body wasn't listening. It knew better than I did. I was suddenly across the distance separating me from Chain Boy, my knee coming up and sinking into his groin, and he folded down. A chain's only good if you can use it. It's also only good for a very short distance. Shorter than you'd think.
How'd I know that?
Suddenly, I had the gun in my right hand, pointed at the last one. He was actually a boy. A weedy little boy with greasy, lank hair and a lean, sallow face. A leather jacket that looked like the cow hadn't missed it yet. And pegged jeans that looked dipped in motor oil. The switchblade dropped from his nerveless hand. My finger tightened on the trigger.
He's just a kid. Come on.
But that kid would have followed his buddies in raping and possibly killing me if I was what they thought I was.
Wait. What am I?
I didn't see the mercury. Martin D. Poors, nice guy and granny driver, had left me in an alley.
Nice of him.
Of course he would. It was the way things were going.
Pay attention.
The boy in the motorcycle jacket just stood there and shivered. I don't know what he saw on my face, but it gave him some trouble. Maybe it was the mismatched eyes, one blue, one brown, that I'd found staring at me in the diner's restroom mirror. Maybe it was the gunk smeared all over me. Maybe it was even the gun.
Go home, go to school, get a job, and stop hanging out in alleys.
His head bobbed, lank hair falling forward in strings.
He reminds me of someone, but who? Someone with a flat, dark stare. Someone I knew because...
No. It was gone. Just for a second I had it. Then it retreated maddeningly. He turned tail and ran, his sneakers kicking aside random bits of trash. I spun slowly in a complete circle, marking every fallen body. The gun swept like a searchlight, tracking by itself to cover possible hiding places before I even thought of it. An easy, instinctive movement.
Just like breathing. Whoever I am, I've spent a lot of time doing this.
Training, Malaya. It gets into bones, runs all the way deep.
Who is that?
He'd trained me well. The guys were down. The first one, the one I'd punched, his cheekbone shattered and bits of white tooth flecking the wet hole of his twisted open mouth, lay utterly still, with his head at an odd angle.
Oh, Christ! Did I kill someone?
The sudden certainty that it wasn't the first time poured down my back, ice cubes trickling.
Nobody who handles a gun like this can be innocent.
I backed up two steps, bare feet on cold concrete. At least I wasn't bleeding anymore. Maybe I was toughening up.
Jill, you clawed your way up out of a grave. I'd say that's pretty damn tough. The question is, what do you do now?
I had a full belly, but I needed shelter. And some more clothes wouldn't be amiss. A quick search of two of the men produced rolls of cash as thick as my forearm. Plus, little plastic baggies full of illegal, smokable stuff. Switchblades, and two guns. A 38 and a 9mm. I tossed them down the alley so the boys didn't get any ideas, and considered the guy I'd punched. After a second or two of thought, I found another roll of cash as well as more baggies on him. He was still breathing. I'd only broken his cheekbone and quite a few of his teeth.
But my hand doesn't hurt at all. And how did I blink across space to take out Chain Boy?
I didn't know my own strength.
Jesus.
I got the hell out of there. The plastic bags on the tiny room's colorless bed gave up a black V-neck t-shirt and a pair of jeans, which I could only hope fit, since I hadn't been able to try them on. It was bad enough waiting in the shadows for the gigantic Walmart a mile away to open. By 9 a.m., when the doors whooshed wide, I was a bundle of exposed, dirty, and vulnerable nerves. I shouldn't have worried. Those employees don't bat an eye. I guess no matter what I looked like, they'd seen worse. After getting an eyeful of the crowd, waiting to scramble on in and get their cheap shit even cheaper, I won't exactly say I was heartened, but I was feeling a little more anonymous. I had remembered my shoe size, at least, but the sneakers felt weird, too light and flexible. The new holster for the .45, on the other hand, fit perfectly. Ammunition had been reasonably cheap, and as soon as I put it in my basket, I felt soothed.
Whoever I am, I don't like being unarmed, or short of ammo.
I was hoping the modifications on the gun hadn't made it unable to fire a basic clip, but there it was. I had found a place on the edge of the barrio. Some clear instinct warned me not to go any further into that tangle of streets, so I just picked a likely-looking hotel and paid for two nights. Cash up front. No ID requested or given. It was the kind of place usually rented by the hour, and after about 2 p.m., it started doing a brisk trade.
At least the shower works.
I shoved the ruined, filthy clothes in a plastic bag. I dumped them elsewhere. Something told me it was best to leave no traces. I set down the .45 on the flimsy, bolted-down nightstand and sat on top of the cheap chintz bedspread. My hair was already drying, raveling up into dark curls. I was pale, and the face in the mirror across the room was nothing special, except for the mismatched eyes. Long, thin nose, mouth pulled tight and thin, bruise-colored shadows under said eyes almost reaching down to the prominent cheekbones. I looked half-starved.
Who the hell am I? Let's see. Evidence. One silver ring with Cyrillic script inside, one gun, one weird gem-like thing implanted in my right wrist.
Of course, there was the little matter of Martin Pores and his vanishing mercury. But if I had just dug my way up out of a shallow grave, maybe I'd hallucinated that bit and just wandered around dreaming of diner food.
I can't rule that out.
The only other thing was the tattoo. A black, tribal-looking scorpion high up on the inside of my right thigh. It itched and tingled, but maybe that was only because I'd scrubbed at it, thinking it was dirt. My hands were capable and calloused. My battered feet were healed, too. No sign of the bloody mess they'd been after walking miles of highway. Even if I'd just been wandering around in a hallucination, I'd been shoeless and bleeding.
But now you can't tell.
For some reason, I turned my head and looked at the window. My hair felt weird, like there should have been something in it.
Lots of little somethings digging into the back of my head. Tiny gleams, little hard things.
For just a moment, I had it, but it slipped away again.
Oh, maybe I'm insane.
That's definitely on the table. Don't rule anything out, Kismet.
Kismet?
Another light turned on inside my head.
Jill Kismet. That's who I am. But who is she?
I waited, but nothing else came up.
It's daylight. Sleepy time. Because daylight is safe.
I tested that thought. It felt right.
Daylight's for sleeping. Night is when I work.
That was comforting to know.
Or not.
I closed my eyes, told the gnawing in my belly to go away. I'd wait until dusk. Without undressing, I fell back onto the bed, lifting my feet up.
The way things are going, who knows if I'll have to make my exit on the fly.
I had awakened from a vivid dream. For a second, I had everything. It trembled inside my head. A greenhouse. A fire of blue flame. The taste of steel between my lips. Then it was gone. Dusk was rising, and something had told me the hotel might not be safe. The need to get out and move had itched under my skin. I found out something else, too. I liked heights. I especially liked gliding along rooftops like a ghost, peering into the streets below, looking for something I couldn't define,
while dusk rose from every corner, cloaking the city in peculiar static heat, the rising wind bringing me an oddly familiar tang of river as everything exhaled. Preparing for the plunge into darkness. Everything about it was familiar, even the shapes of the city streets, the arterial blood flow of traffic, the quiet neighborhoods and the back alleys, the parts that lit up only when the light failed. And yet, everything was unfamiliar. The sneakers were too light. I felt oddly naked, like I should have more. A heavy weight on my shoulders, and something flapping at my ankles. Something on my face. And those little weights tied into my hair. Not to mention the fact that my left hand kept dropping to my side like it expected to find another gun.
Or something else.
The city revolved inside my head. I knew the street names, sometimes only after I dropped down to their level and looked around a bit. The town clung to the banks of the river. A big granite Jesus on top of a hospital downtown spread his arms in a menacing blessing. Nightclubs pounded. Weird things skittered in the shadows. Every building greeted me with a secret smile. Little bits of geography, whirling like snowflakes, until they settled against the rest of my mental map. It was next to the granite Jesus, looking out over all those tiny dots of light. Something else stirred inside my aching head. I crouched in Christ's spread eagle shadow, watching the very last dregs of light swirl out of the sky, and took in the wind. Even in summer, nights out in the desert can get chilly. No trace of moisture in the air, but a thin, faint thread of something candy-spiced and wicked tickled my nose.
What the hell's that?
I half rose from the crouch, keeping to cover. A cloak of stillness folded over me, my pulse dropping and my entire body chilling.
Follow that. It's not supposed to be here.
I was moving before I knew it, bolting across the rooftop, the world around me blurring. I hit the edge, going full speed. A moment of weightlessness, and smacked the pavement stories below.
Oh, holy shit, did I just do that?
I would have been laughing with crazy joy if not for the fierce sensation in my right arm. Right at my wrist, too. It pulled me along on a reel of silk as I flashed straight up a brick wall. Barely touching the rough surface. My left hand catching at the top and heaving me over with little effort. It was like flying. And I might have liked some time to enjoy it before I collided with a long, tall, thin thing out of a nightmare. Its flesh glowed waxen pale as it flew backward, with its legs and arms drawn in, spider-like. Its eyes glowed with a powdery sheen, and the thing it had been crouching over was a rag of bloody bone and meat that had once been a human being.
Traitor. Put him down quick, Jill. But not so quick you can't question him.
Well, at least now I had a goal. I smashed through two struts, snapping them like matchsticks, and the strength flooding my veins was definitely bolting up my right arm from the thing, the gem, whatever it was. I was on him in a hot heartbeat, feeling something in his torso give way under my fist. The traitor's teeth were shark-like points, steaming saliva dripping and foaming. My scream wasn't from the pain. No, I screamed in pure frustration. I knew what to do, but I didn't have the tools to do it. I didn't have my knives or my coat or...
Oh, yeah!
A hole opened in the traitor's back. The exit wound blossoming obscenely. An agonized expression spilled over his face, his mouth full of my flesh. Blood squirted, and whatever venom he had on those sharp triangular teeth burned as it spattered my neck. I twisted, gaining leverage and shoving him off.
Thank God for judo, Jelly Bean. Now get him good.
Another hole opened in his back.
Why is he still moving?
His torso was mangled now. A third hole had opened in his back. This one spattering and spraying wider than the first two.
I got lucky.
The flat, shine-dusted eyes glazed. He twitched, head falling against the ruin of my shoulder. I worked the gun barrel into his flesh-filled mouth, cracking the jaw to get the teeth to loosen up. The back of his head evaporated. Corruption raced through its tissues, little veins of dust spilling from a crack glaze like fine porcelain glued back together and unceremoniously busted again.
This would have been easier with my knives. Where are my fucking knives?
It didn't matter. I scrambled out of his slackening embrace, my sneakers sliding in a tide of brackish fluid. It was blood, but the edges of the red fluid held a taint of black, hungrily threading through and turning it to dust as the body twitched and jerked, heels drumming in a weird dance against the rooftop, the mangled head spilling brain meal as his neck twisted. Yes. I could see now. It was a he. He'd been naked, and his genitals were altered too. Barbed and spiked like...
God, I don't even know what like. They always go for body mods, part of the personality of someone who'll trade their soul away. I know that.
It was a relief to find something I did know for sure.
Even if it is weird as fuck.
My eyes locked on the twitching, disintegrating body.
Watch, Milaya. You watch the death you make is only way.
Mikhail.
I remembered his name now, with a lurching mental effort. Sweat stood out, cold and slick all over me. The gun was steady, pointed at the swiftly rotting corpse as if it might take a mind to get up for round two.
You never know. You just never know.
My shoulder burned, but I ignored it. The gun didn't waver.
So, this is what I do. I leap off multi-story buildings like I'm stepping off a patio. I find weird smells. I get into fights on rooftops. I kill things that shouldn't exist.
The gem on my wrist glowed softly.
When you're ready.
Is that what he meant? My blue-eyed, breakfast-buying hallucination?
Am I having another hallucination right now?
That's the trouble with waking up in your own grave. A whole lot of weird shit suddenly seems pretty reasonable.
Maybe that wasn't your grave. Maybe your name isn't Jill. Maybe Mikhail is something else. Can't assume. That's what he said. All the time.
Do not ever assume is quickest way to get ass blown sideways.
I stared at the bubbling mass until it was clear it wasn't going to get up and come after me again. Then turned to survey the damage. My shoulder had stopped bleeding. When I looked down, craning my neck, a bubbling pink froth was squeezing out of my flesh as it knit itself back together, eating at the t-shirt.
Ugh!
The next step was examining the victim and looking for evidence, like a cop.
Not a cop. A hunter. You do what the cops can't.
An image formed in my head. It was me addressing a class of bright-faced boys and girls in blue dress uniforms.
I will be blunt, rookies. You'll all be required to memorize the number for my answering service, which will page me. Pray you never have to use that number. Three or four of you will have to. A few of you won't have time to. But you can rest assured that when you come up against the night side and get slaughtered, I'll find your killer. And serve justice on him or her or it. And I will also lay your soul to rest if killing you is just the beginning. Holy fuck.
There was a pile of clothing. Workman's boots, overalls, a red plaid shirt, a billfold in one of the pockets, a nice wad of 50s and 100s that I took without compunction, an ID showing a sullen, lean face. It was dark up here. but I had no trouble picking out the features of the thing I'd just killed. Back when it had been human, its name had been Eric Allen Dodge, and he lived in the Cruzada district. Staring at the address gave me a map of the city, different routes I could take to get out to his house if I needed to give it a look-see. There was one more thing, and I held it while I crouched to look at the rag of meat and bone he'd been hunched over when I hit him. The victim was female. There was enough of her left to tell, mostly because the breasts were chopped free and laid to one side, and her plumbing was oddly untouched.
He must have been saving that for last.
Not enough blood on the roof. So he'd killed her elsewhere and brought the body here. Her heart, a fist-sized lump of flesh, was set neatly aside with her tatas. There were other bits. Something that was probably her liver. Long strings of guts. Her face had been savaged. About all I could tell was that she'd probably been dishwater blonde or light brunette. Her shoulder-length hair was matted with clotted blood and filth. White slivers of teeth poked through the hamburger of what was left of her features. On her left hand, a gleam of gold, a wedding ring on her third finger, just where the silver rested on my own left hand.
Do svidaniya.
I looked at the only other thing that had been in Dodge's wallet. It was a plain, thick, dove gray business card.
Monde Nui.
There was an address out near the meatpacking district. I knew exactly where the meatpacking district was, and the location seemed familiar.
More than familiar. Well, isn't this just my lucky night?
The place looked foul. The atmosphere over it had thickened like a bruise, my left eye smarting and watering as it untangled layer after layer of rotting cheesecloth.
Etheric bruising. That means it's a haunt. You know what a haunt is, right, Jellybean? A place where wild animals go to feed. There's breed in there, and traders. You need silver. Silver?
My right hand flashed up, touched my hair.
That's what should be here. Silver charms.
Tied in with red thread. It was traditional.
Doesn't help me now, though.
I loitered at the edge of the parking lot, sunk in shadows. There was brush here, and I crouched easily. The place looked familiar. A long, low building, parking lot shading to gravel at the edges. A couple of gorillas at the door and a line waiting to go in. I studied the shapes of the people in line. They moved oddly. Scary, quicksilver grace, or twitching, almost stasis. And even at this distance, I could see the twisting under the surface of their normal shapes. The twisting threatened to give me a headache, until I figured out I could simply make note of it and it would stop bothering me. I just had to acknowledge it.
Someone in there knows who I am.
But these were things like the thing I'd killed on the roof.
They're wrong, and very, very bad. And I have no silver, just the business card and...
A long black limousine took a right into the parking lot. The car glowed. Wet light from the tangle of red neon over the building's front, sliding over its sleek flanks. My focus narrowed. I leaned forward, coming up out of the crouch as if compelled. My body obeyed smoothly, but my right wrist twinged. I glanced down, but the gem set in the skin was the same, a colorless sparkle. As one of the bouncers stepped forward to the door, my right hand touched the gun butt, fingers running over it like they expected to read Braille. A pale head rose out of the car. I moved forward, impelled, cutting through a line of dusty parked cars. My hand curled around the gun, but I didn't draw it yet. The ring on my left hand ran with blue light, a sea-shine gleam. They became aware of me in stages, as if I was a storm moving through from the mountains. First, the eerie, graceful part of the line, with their seashell hips and liner-drenched eyes, stilled. Their heads came up, Sculpted nostrils flared, cherry-glazed lips parted. They were beautiful, but under that beauty lay the twisting. The jerky, oddly shaped ones were next. Their lips parted to show sharp, filed teeth. One of them, a broad, wide man shape dressed in a caricature of a construction worker's plaid shirt and Carhartts, his work boots stained with something dark and fetid, locked eyes on me. Instinct made me pause, staring at him. Yellow eyes. Unholy foxfire in the irises and the pupils flaring and constricting like a cobra's head. He tensed as his knees slowly bent.
He's getting ready to spring.
Movement. The pale head of hair was approaching. They cringed and fell back from him. But I didn't look. I stared at the traitor, my fingers slowly tightening on the gun. If he jumped me, I had some running room and cover in the parking lot. Maybe I could tangle them up and... There was a blur of motion. Cream-colored linen streaking. A pale, clawed hand flashed out. The construction worker fell sideways, arterial spray blooming high and red. The drops hung in a perfect arc, and I saw each one was tinged with that tracery of black, hungrily gobbling at the fluid as it splashed.
Holy shit.
The pale man stepped out of the way, polished wingtips gleaming just like the car, and my gaze snapped to him. The gun was in my hand and my arm was straight and braced, pallid hair in a layered razor cut, blue eyes, and the face wasn't beautiful. He looked normal. Average lips, average cheekbones, an average all-American nose. The suit was linen, sharply creased and expensive, and the eyes were bright blue. He regarded me with pleasant, cheerful interest, and I blinked before my left eye gave a twinge, and I caught a glimpse of the twisting rippling under his flawless skin. A wine-red tie. He lifted his right hand and touched the half-Windsor knot, as if it had been knocked a millimeter out of place. Taller than me, his shoulders braced and his hips narrow, my mouth suddenly filling with copper adrenaline, and my pulse dropping into a low, steady rhythm.
This is a face I know.
His left hand twitched. The fingers drew up like claws, and his paleness was a shade or two darker there. Something had happened to that hand. Something my brain shied away from even as it threatened to plunge through the fog and remember. A spark popped from my ring's silver surface, photo flash blue.
I know you. From somewhere. I know you.
He studied me for another long moment. His smile widened. He actually grinned, pearly teeth. Very sharp, but normal as well. It was a television newscaster's beaming, wide and practiced. Those blue eyes lit up.
Of course you know me. Our darling little Kismet returned. How lovely!
He stepped off the curb, but the bruisers looming behind him, one with a submachine gun, the other just a pile of over-yeasted muscle, didn't move.
You look beautiful.
I twitched outright, nervously, the gun tracking him. He paid no attention. He leaned forward, balanced on his toes, his entire body focusing on me.
Oh, my lovely, my own. Of course I know you. What have they done to you?
They? Whoever it was left me in the desert, in a grave? I rotted, but I came back.
They sent me back to... I don't know.
My throat was suddenly dry. Queasy heat boiled through my stomach, and I was suddenly aware the entire crowd of them was too still to be human.
If they jump you now, Jill, you're not gonna have an easy time of it. You're not even really armed. Just this gun with useless ammunition. You need silver, and lots of it.
It was a fine time to remember that.
And what does this have to do with that thing on the rooftop and the flayed, opened-up body, its organs set neatly aside?
I backed up, even more nervously.
Don't leave, dear one. Come inside. You look hungry.
What a coincidence. I was suddenly starving, an empty blowtorch hole in my guts. I examined his face. Whatever lived underneath that skin rippled. It didn't look good. And the business card in the wallet of a murderous thing was not an endorsement. But he was familiar. Whoever he was, I knew him.
That doesn't mean he's any good. But do I have any other option?
My gun lowered slightly. The hunger suddenly went all the way through me. My right wrist twitched, a fishhook under the skin yanking restlessly.
That's it. Come inside. There's a bed and sharp, shiny things to make you feel safer. You want knives, don't you? And a gun or two, and a long, long black coat, and shining, chiming things to tie in your lovely hair.
His tongue flicked out and touched his bloodless lower lip. In the uncertain ruddy light, it was a startling wet cherry red. Half disgust boiled under my breastbone. The other half was something I couldn't name.
Perry. You're Perry.
His irises glowed, sterile, cold blue. Thin threads of indigo slid through the whites of his eyes, a vein map. His pupils dilated a little.
At your service, in every conceivable way, Kiss. That's what I call you. A pretty name for a pretty girl. Come. There's food and drink and a place to rest. And answers. You would like answers, wouldn't you? Your perennial plaint. Tell me why. You'll be under my protection, darling one. Nothing to fear. Just come and let me soothe you.
It sounded good. Better than good. For a moment, something else trembled under the surface of my memory, but it retreated again. Maddening. The feeling that I should know. That I should understand. Instead of pushing myself blindly forward from place to place. The ring was warm, a forgiving touch against my flesh.
First, tell me something.
Oh, anything. Anything you like.
I searched through every question I had. There were too many of them crowding me. His pupils swelled.
Oh, what the...
The wasp's roar materialized in my head from nowhere, eating and buzzing, little tiny insect feet prodding as they crawled over me again. A galvanic shudder racked me. The gun dropped even further.
Who am I? What the hell are you?
You are my Kiss. And I... My darling, I am Legion. I am unconquerable fire. But don't worry. I am also your humble host this momentous evening. You've arrived just in time. Come!